Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect, it is 1:33 p.m. on Thursday, April 21st, 2022. Present today are Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Josephson, myself, Co-Chair Merrick. Also with us today is Representative Klayman. This afternoon, we will hear an introduction of House Bill 61, Interior Designers, and consider House Bill 307, Extending Interior Energy Project Bond Authority. So with that, we will begin with an introduction of House Bill 61, Register Commercial Interior Designers, by Representative Klayman. Welcome back, Representative. If you could place yourself on the record, and you can begin your presentation. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It's great to be here. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Klayman, and I'm the state representative for House District 21 in West Anchorage. First, I want to thank you all for hearing House Bill 61. House Bill 61 makes important changes to our professional licensing statute that recognize the expertise of certified commercial interior designers and grant them the corresponding privileges. As a diverse profession, there are several different specialties under the title of interior designer. Among the most knowledgeable and highly trained are those who can pass the National Council of Interior Design qualification. The NCIDQ, which is the National Council of Interior Design qualification, is a three-part, 11-hour examination that was created for the purpose of identifying interior design professionals with the skills and experience to take on additional responsibility. This test is designed to assess the competency of candidates to protect the public through the practice of interior design and covers subjects such as fire safety, ADA compliance, emergency egress, and material flammability. A candidate unable to prove their understanding of life safety codes and standards would be extremely unlikely to pass the exam. The goal is not to measure interior designers by the standards used by architects. While there are shared skill sets between architects and interior designers focus on a specific scope of work. By comparison, there are differences between licensing requirements for physician assistants and doctors who sometimes perform similar activities. The NCIDQ is rigorous and requires at a minimum a 60 semester credit hours of post-secondary interior design coursework that encompasses a certificate, degree, or diploma from an accredited institution to sit for the exam. Currently, there is no state licensing of the interior design profession in Alaska. One consequence of this licensing gap is that commercial interior designers do not have access to a construction stamp that would allow them to submit their work for permitting. House Bill 61 will allow Alaska to join other forward-looking states that have granted certified interior commercial designers a construction stamp valid only for projects within their limited professional qualifications. House Bill 61 describes what commercial interior designers will be able to produce and stamp independent of an architect or engineer. The practice of commercial interior design described in House Bill 61 is specific and limited to non-load-bearing interior design elements, such as interior planning for occupant loads and exiting, and specification of code-compliant interior finishes, furnishings, and fixtures. The scope of a commercial interior design practice described in House Bill 61 is well within the competencies of interior designers as determined by their education, training, and examination. House Bill 61 will bring economic benefits by increasing professional employment opportunities, providing incentive to hire Alaskans for professional interior design, attracting high-quality design talent to the state, encouraging small business and unrestrained trade, and expanding consumer choices for qualified design professionals. House Bill 61 does not restrict requirements or daily practice for any other profession in design or construction, including architects, engineers, contractors, tradespeople, decorators, or residential designers. House Bill 61 is intended to be cost neutral to the state as it is self-funded within the AELS Registration Board through application, registration, and renewal fees. As shown in the attached fiscal note, the passage of this bill would enable the AELS Registration Board to hire a much-needed additional occupational licensee examiner, and the cost per license would only be an additional $30 every 2 years. With the passage of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, there will be $1.2 trillion, bringing opportunities for design professionals to work on public facility projects. The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act will help provide many opportunities to rebuild our economy and strengthen the construction industry, and this bill will help get projects ready to build by having more professionals licensed in their field. We often talk of making Alaska open and ready for business. This bill turns those words into action and will make Alaska a better place to do business. So please join me in supporting House Bill 61. And with that, I'll pass it off to Brianna Kakarik, who will walk you through the sectional analysis.
Great. Thank you, Representative Klayman. Hi, welcome. If you could place yourself on the record and go over the sectional.
Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brianna Kakarik, and I'm staff to Representative Klayman. Thank you for hearing House Bill 61. Sections 1 through 4 relate to establishing the new terms in the AELS Licensing Board. Section 5 would add two seats to the board, one for a commercial interior designer and an additional engineering seat, creating separate seats for electrical and mechanical engineering, which currently share a seat. Section 6 through 9 would establish commercial interior design as a certification tracked by the state of Alaska. Sections 8 through 14 would establish the examination requirements for registration as a commercial interior designer. Section 15 would establish commercial interior design as a seal that can be obtained and that is to be affixed to construction plans. Sections 16 through 22 would establish commercial interior design terminology in relation to the registration of corporations, limited liability partnerships, and limited liability companies. Sections 23 through 28 would protect the term commercial interior design from use by those not registered. Section 29 would relate to exemptions and add commercial interior design to the list of necessary exemptions. Sections 30 through 32 would establish definitions for terms used in the statute. Sections 33 through 42 would establish commercial interior design as a term in legal context relating to the statute. And sections 43 through 46 would establish the effective date and grace period for registration. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there questions? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I got a couple of questions. The Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors submitted a letter providing testimony regarding HB 61. The letter is dated January 26th of 2022. I think it's included in our packets. The testimony provided in the attachments to this letter listed concerns regarding House Bill 61 by board members in regard to this bill. And if the board still have these concerns, then personally I'd rather follow the board's advice rather than passing a bill that adds to their workload and the staff workload. Under point three of their testimony on the page, on item three in their testimony, it is noted that the complexities of their multidisciplined board are already substantial and they have concerns about adding a new discipline. We may want to consider establishing a new board for architects and interior designers rather than adding the interior designers or establishing procedures for interior designers that are recommended as the board states under their point number five. So I'm just curious about where are we at with where the board is now.
Great, thank you. And let the record reflect at 1:34 p.m. we were joined by Representative Wolf.
You may want to get some clarification from the actual board, but it's my understanding that the concerns you're looking at is actually members of the board, but they're not speaking on behalf of the board. It's my understanding that the AELS board has not taken a formal position on this legislation.
But they did
follow up.
But they did send a letter with their concerns, and those are there's five different points that they had real concerns with. I'm just wondering if they still have those concerns. And if they do, should we step back a little bit and maybe take a look at creating a new board for just the architects and interior designers?
First, in terms of the question about creating a separate board, I actually think that in the world of trying to keep government at a manageable size, creating a whole other board would actually be creating bigger government, not smaller government. There's a lot of overlap in expertise between architects, engineers, and if we add interior designers, there's a lot of overlap. And so keeping it as a single board and having that, that cross-pollination of expertise, I think, is actually beneficial. If we were to create a separate board for architects and interior designers, probably at least seven people on the board, there would be additional expenses. The fiscal note for this bill is actually only adding one position, and so it's actually, in terms of manageable, a manageable workload with the additional position, I think is very manageable.
Representative Thompson.
I'm just reviewing the letter.
Are there other questions before invited testimony? Representative Josephson. Thank you. So with that, it looks like we have three invited testifiers. First is Colin Maynard, president of the Alaska Professional Design Council. Welcome to House Finance, and I will remind everyone that public testimony is, this is invited testimony. If you could please state your affiliation, your name, and go ahead and begin your testimony. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. For the record, I am Colin Maynard, registered civil and structural engineer in Alaska. I am the chair of the legislative committee for the Alaska Professional Design Council. I'm not the president, although I did serve in that position twice before. My experience includes 8 years on the Board of Registration for Architects and Engineers. ABDC is an organization that's a collaborative effort of organizations representing engineers, surveyors, landscape architects, and interior designers. And until last year, we also represented architects. The group has existed for almost 50 years. I've been on the legislative committee for over 30 years. The objections raised in 1861 are very similar to those that were raised by individual architects and civil engineers in the late 90s in response to the effort to register landscape architects. Their complaints turned out to be baseless. The national and state architects organizations have come out in opposition to any interior designer registration. However, the National Council of Architectural Registration Board, which is in charge of the licensing of architects across the U.S., started a thorough review of the similarities and differences between the systems for registering architects and certifying interior designers. They did this work in conjunction with the Council for Interior Design Certification, which is a similar organization for interior designers. They both manage the exams for licensure of those two disciplines, as well as set model laws for those things. The study was completed by architects, interior designers, and some individuals who registered or certified as both. It took 3 years, and the report was released in 2021. The report states that the two professions are unique, distinct disciplines. It specifically did not suggest a merger of the two professions, nor suggest that their services are interchangeable. I do agree that many of the skills and professional knowledge is similar and in some cases identical, but their analysis found clearly eliminated differences as well. They believe that their study could be used to promote productive collaboration and dialogue between the two professions and pursue the mutual acknowledgement and agreement regarding the reasonable regulation of architecture and interior design. APDC believes that HB 61 provides the framework for such reasonable regulation, does not prevent architects from providing the services they always done. The leg gives qualified interior designers the ability to provide the services within their purview without having to hire an architect when the public safety code issue arises. APDC urges you to pass this bill. I'd like to respond to the question about splitting boards. I would be very loath to do that. In states that have separate boards, architect and engineers boards typically, there are many disputes between those boards about what belongs in which field, and we don't have any of that because we have all at one board, and the board can do all that discussion without having regulations that are diametrically opposed adopted by different organizations. I'm available for any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Maynard, for calling in. Are there questions? I see none. Thank you so much. We appreciate your testimony. Next is C.B. Bettysworth, founder of Bettysworth North. Welcome to House Finance. If you could please place yourself on the record and begin your begin your testimony.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Charles Bettysworth. I'm a resident of Fairbanks. I'm an architect, a member of the American Institute of Architects, and also a fellow of that organization. I've lived in Alaska all my life. My background is I'm the founder of Bettesworth North Architects and Planners, with offices in Fairbanks and in Anchorage. Bettesworth North is a multidisciplinary firm and providing services in architecture, interior design, and landscape architecture. I led that organization for some 40 years. I'm supposed to be retired, but I flunked that test, and I now work part-time. I realize your time is busy, so I'll try to be short. For most building projects, architects engage the services of a group of licensed registered professionals, including geotechnical engineers, landscape architects, civil engineers, structural engineers, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, and on some projects, environmental engineers. These are all disciplines that have special training, experience, and qualifications, and are licensed, specifically tested and licensed in those disciplines. By stamping and sealing these documents, these disciplines then take full responsibility of their work, and in doing so, the architect can fully rely on these documents, providing a facility that is, meets all the various health, safety, life safety, and welfare requirements. By adding licensure and registration of commercial interior design professionals, architects will have the benefit of similar assurance with respect to commercial interior design services. Yesterday, I provided a letter of support to the committee, which hopefully will be entered into the record. I fully support the passage of HB 61, and I thank you for your consideration. And I'm available for questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Bettesworth. We appreciate you calling in. I see no questions. We will move to Chelsea Beardsley. She's a student pursuing a professional design degree. Welcome, Ms. Beardsley. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, we can. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Chelsea Beardsley, and I am a full-time interior architecture and design student. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Thank you so much for your time to express my support of House Bill 61. As I said, my name is Chelsea Beardsley. I am a lifelong Alaskan and West High School student and stellar secondary graduate, currently completing my bachelor's degree, a Colorado State University CETA-accredited interior design program. Interior design school is demanding and intense. I am currently finishing the most course-heavy year of my program. This year alone, my courses covered included building codes, fire and ICC codes, accessibility guidelines, evidence-based design, sustainability, materiality, and designed to support occupant health and well-being. I am seeking an internship for the coming summer as part of my degree's requirements, and and I'm considering postgraduate employment opportunities, prioritizing destinations that provide the best opportunities to achieve my professional goals. Since Alaska does not currently recognize the interior design profession, and I would be required to work under the oversight of an architect to do the kind of commercial interior design work I aspire to, opportunities out of state are currently more enticing, especially as more and more states are recognizing their interior design professionals and providing them with better practice opportunities in the lower 48 with their respective interior design legislative initiatives. Please vote in favor of House Bill 61. It will increase professional job opportunities, attract high-quality design talent to Alaska, and encourage those earning interior design degrees outside to return home for professional registration, similar to students like myself. Thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Beardsley. We wish you the best in your pursuit. I see no questions. And with that, the committee has been asked to hear from Catherine Fritz, who is the chair of the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. Ms. Fritz, are you available? And if so, can you please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony?
Hello, this is...
Was asked by whom? Was this a committee request, or...
Correct, someone on the committee requested it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Catherine Fritz. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. If you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Merrick. This is Catherine Fritz. I serve as chair of the AALS board currently. I've been an architect in Alaska since 1990 and a resident of Alaska for about 39 years now. As was referenced at the beginning of the meeting by Representative Thompson, there is a letter in your packet dated in uh, January from the board. This is official board action. It's not individual members of the board. We submitted it. It's pretty much a summary of what was submitted last year to the Labor and Commerce Committee. Our legislative liaison committee, which is chaired by Lauren Lehman, he was not able to attend today, but he put together this summary, and the board took action on it at the November meeting and then sent it off to you in January for consideration. The bottom line is we do have concerns as a board about the House Bill 61 that is currently written. There are individual concerns and opinions on whether or not interior designers should become licensed, but that is not the nature of my comments today, nor is it the nature of the memo that is in your packet. I would be glad to go through the 5 points individually, but I don't want to spend time doing that if people feel that they already have a good understanding of what those five issues are. If the board were to have an ask out of today's meeting, it would be that we have time to work with Representative Clayman and the interior design industry to see if we can find a mutual compromise to the concerns that are addressed in our letter. I would also just add that we're concerned about an additional workload, but it's more a concern about how the ramifications of this bill will create workload. So I think I'll leave it at that. And again, like I said, I'm very glad to talk with you in more detail if that is warranted. And I believe that Director Chambers is also in the meeting today, so she may be able to answer questions as well. Thank you.
Wonderful. She is here. We have questions from Representative Ortiz, Josephson, Wool, and Carpenter. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So can I ask how many members do you have that's a part of the Alaska State Board of Architects, Engineers, Land Surveys?
Through the chair, if you're referring to the number of people that we license, overall there are about 7,400 total licensees in the state of Alaska, or that they have state of Alaska registration. About 600 of those are architects. I don't have the breakdown of how many reside in state and how many reside elsewhere and are licensed to practice here. Director Chambers may have that information.
Ms. Chambers, do you have that information available? Perhaps you could get it to the committee.
Sure.
Representative Ortiz. Yes.
Thank you. As a follow-up, my question is not necessarily how many people are, I guess what I'm saying is how many people are part of the board that make up the board. The letter that you were referring to that outlined the five areas of concern, it says it's submitted by Lauren Lehman, which you mentioned in your comments. And then it says other members participating, I assume in the process of writing this letter, where there are three people listed. And so I'm thinking, okay, well then how many total are there a part of the board? And is this letter truly a reflection of the entire board, or is it a reflection of the members participating? I don't need to list them. There's three members listed there.
Through the chair, there was a cover letter attached to the 5 points. It's dated January 26, 22, and it was signed by the chair at that time, Elizabeth Johnston. And in that cover letter, she notes that this is the action of the this is a board decision, a board document being forwarded to you. There are 11 members on the AELS board currently.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you. And a final follow-up then, while, you know, I appreciate your concern about the time that we have in this committee and you didn't want to go through all 5 points, can you summarize your basic concerns in a statement as to your concerns with HB 61, or to put it in a better way, the board's concerns with HB 61? Can you summarize what they are?
Through the chair, I'd be glad to do that. The first point has to do with the overlap of practice. there is not a clear, quote, lane established for interior designers in HB 61. So we are concerned that there will be extensive investigations and other actions as a result of not having clarity. The second one is that there are quite a few specific word uses of language that are not aligned with other disciplines. Two examples that come to mind. The word commercial in the title of this act is problematic in that none of the other design professions are exclusively commercial. And projects are commercial, institutional, residential. There's a lot of different types of projects. But the core point of the ALS board is to regulate the health, safety, and welfare of the practice. So it saying that only the commercial things apply become problematic in being able to execute the law. A second word is, if you look under the definition of interior design, it talks about, I believe that is in section, I'm sorry, I don't have it handy. Oh, it's section 32 of the bill. It talks about public occupancies. However, architects and engineers are responsible for public and private occupancies. So this brings up the question, well, if a facility is privately owned or operated, does that mean it's within the context of the law or not? So those are the kinds of things that are problematic when we review the bill. The third one about workload, I think we've talked about that already, and I think it was referenced by Representative Thompson earlier. There would be a significant impact not only on getting this bill set up for actual implementation, but also on enforcement. And then the fourth was about CIDQ, the organization that was referenced by a couple of previous people who testified. And there are some questions about how CIDQ operates. For example, they approve whether or not a candidate is acceptable to sit for an exam. In the state of Alaska, in our statutes, we, the board, has to make that approval. So we were actually in a teleconference with myself and Mr. Lehman and our staff person. We talked with one of the CIDQ staff members and asked about that. And they said that they would figure out something to make it work. But that's not, we'd like to know what that is before we adopt a new law that references a specific organization that may or may not be able to meet the needs that are in statute already. And then the fifth one resulted from some confusion last year when this bill was with Labor and Commerce. There were some people that felt that this was a voluntary act and that people wouldn't necessarily be required to get a license as an interior designer. But that is not how this bill is drafted, and you can look at Section 23 that specifically states that a person may not engage in commercial interior design unless they are registered, and there are some others as well. So what it does is have an impact on people who have been operating independently with a business license as commercial interior designers for many, many years, decades in some cases. They will now have to stop what they're doing and either become registered, change their business model, or do some kind of a response to the fact that what they've been doing will no longer be allowed. So those are some of the examples of the, we believe that, you know, as a board, we have not taken a position to oppose or endorse this legislation. Instead, what we've tried to say is it needs some work, and if this is a law that the state of Alaska legislature wants to pass, we will absolutely do our best to enforce that law. But we would like to have a say and have our concerns addressed before it goes through the complete process to become a law.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Ms. Fritz, and I want to order. You mentioned Section 23 and that some people who are practicing interior design would be left out if they chose, but they didn't choose to sort of sign up for the licensure. But while you may be right, that isn't your greatest concern, really, is it? Unless you have a relationship with someone and you'd feel badly for them that they couldn't earn a living doing it anymore.
Through the chair, I think that is accurate to say. I don't see an enforcement reason per se, except that it could create some stress on the workload of the division by people frustrated that they can no longer do what they used to do. But you're correct. I believe that the board impact to that is negligible as I can think of right now.
Yes, follow up.
And Ms. Fritz, I'm still learning this as we go along, so I thank you for your indulgence. But you mentioned that the CIDQ would be responsible for licensing and examining these, I guess, 24-plus growing individuals. And you made some you said that would be a different body than is used, I guess, by your board now. But I would assume that right now, for example, if I were a registered architect and the board changed how a registered professional environmental engineer qualified, I might only be incidentally and remotely concerned about that, right? It may not change my life very much. Isn't that true?
Through the chair, I can't speak directly to the environmental engineer example. But what I can say is that I think that the board's concern over CIDQ is more that it is an unknown entity. Your example of the environmental engineer points to NCEES, which is a long-established the engineering group that sets the standards and the model law and those kind of things. This is not CIDQ. Is younger. They have many of the important components that both NCEES and NCARB have, but it's more to a point that there are some specific things that the board is charged to do by statute. For example, approve applications before the exam takes place. That CIDQ is not, that's not their business model. That's not what they do. Anybody right now who has a NCIDQ acronym after their name has worked directly with the CIDQ people to get that acronym, which included taking the national exam. They've done it without reference to or participation by a jurisdictional authority. So that's the problem that could be there. It could be overcome with existing statute, or it might be that the proposed statute to modifications that are in this bill would have to include something else to make sure that element could work properly. We need to be able to understand that, study it, and make sure that the bill addresses it.
Representative Josephson.
And I'll tell you, Ms. Fritz, and maybe this is just the nature of how I think, but although boards are important and interesting and their authority is important, I guess I wanted to give you a chance to describe what's happening on the ground at the construction site or in the offices of Architects and Interior Designs when you're working on a CAD system or whatever it is that it's called. And here what I mean is, if you could paint a picture about what this looks like when one enters a building structurally, why is this important in terms of who gets a stamp and who doesn't, and how this will impact the occupant, visitor, or consumer of a building?
Through the chair, thank you for those questions. The consumer won't see anything different than what they see today. They will walk into a building with confidence that the health, safety, and welfare of them and the general public has been met. through the regulatory process that is used for licensed professionals. So that won't change. Any architectural project, as was previously mentioned in testimony, I believe, by Mr. Maynard and possibly also Mr. Bettisworth, it's a team approach to these building projects, to most building projects. And that team includes many people who have registrations, such as the engineers that were exampled, and it also includes people who do not have registrations. I think that geologists were referenced by an earlier testimony, though geologists are not regulated through the statutes here in 08.48 that we are addressing today. They are certified or licensed. I'm sorry, I don't know the specifics. I'm sure that Director Chambers could tell you they are regulated by Alaska, but not in the same way that the AELS board regulates. So it's a team approach of many different levels of expertise. Interior designers are, there are a couple dozen of them in the state who meet the qualifications that are outlined in this bill. They are talented people. Some of them work independently. Some of them work for architecture firms. Some of them are actually principals in architecture firms. They make good contributions to projects, but they are not trained in the same way, with the same levels of responsibility and the same types of detail, as architects are. So what needs to happen for there to be clarity of what they really are authorized to do is that, quote, lane, unquote, that I referred to earlier, it needs to be defined or taken away from the practice of architecture, which is actually what North Carolina did when they passed their law last year. Our interior designers, it specifically indicates in their law that they can't practice architecture. Fortunately, North Carolina has got a list of health, safety, welfare type of tasks or components, elements that make up architecture, and they were able to refer to that. We don't have that in Alaska, but that's not to say that we couldn't carve it out so that it could be totally clear what interior designers could do versus what architects do. And my final note on this, which I hope will help, is that interior designers do a lot of things that are not health, safety, welfare. So do architects, so do engineers. There's a lot of things involved in a business or a lot of things in executing a project. But many of the things that are named, that are defined as interior design, choosing furnishings and fixtures, choosing floor finishes or wall finishes, aren't necessarily things that are considered health, safety, welfare for every single type of building. And I think there is concern about to what level should we be getting down in the weeds of saying that, well, you know, a person who's certified or credentialed in a certain way with a license can choose your carpet or your furniture or, you know, what have you. I hope that helps.
Thank you. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. More answers I hear, the more questions I have. But don't worry, I see that look. No. Ms. Fritz, a couple questions. Your letter and others have said you're concerned about the definition of the scope of practice, that it's too wide and maybe undefined, and you sort of alluded to that. Is there a specific, can you get a teeny bit more specific on that one point?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Wall. I think that I would refer to the definition itself in the bill, which is Section 32 of the bill. Of course, the first concern is in that the first statement, line 11, where it talks about public occupancy, whereas architects and engineers are, they deal with both public and private occupancies through their definitions. Those other disciplines have definitions as well in the existing statute. Then if you go through A through E, you see a lot of terms here that aren't necessarily health, safety, welfare related. For example, analysis, research, planning, enhancing. The board has concerns that in the committee discussion where we came up with this list of five elements, there were concerns expressed that we shouldn't be in the business of overly defining things that are not health, safety, welfare related, and that our statutes should stay focused on health, safety, and welfare, and stay focused on the things that are fundamental to that for the public. So those are a couple of the things. There's also some questions of, you know, even the word fixture can be problematic. It's in Section B. Are these light fixtures, plumbing fixtures? What kind of fixtures are we talking about? So this definition, if you compare this to the definition of engineering or of architecture, these parts are very, they elaborate a lot, whereas the other definitions are very succinct. And that's where the concern is that it's very broad, trying to apply any kind of enforcement to words like research and planning and analysis.
Yes, Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Another question. You described, Representative Josephson asked how the consumer's experience would be changed, say, walking into a commercial building under this bill, and you said they wouldn't notice a difference. But what would the change be in the sort of planning room of a firm that has architects, engineers, and interior designers if this bill were to pass? And I'm just going to say some things that hopefully are accurate, and you'll correct me if they're not. But I'm assuming when a building is being built, there's plans that engineers and architects have to sign off on and stamp with their professional stamp to say, I've looked at these plans, I approve them, I'm signing them, and they're legal and safe, et cetera, et cetera. Currently, the designer, interior designer, does not have to, quote unquote, sign off on this. And I'm assuming whatever they put into the plan is either covered under the other signature, say, of the architect, or just maybe isn't needed, and I don't know. But you described some situations where a certain task would now be defined as under the domain of an interior designer. Would that mean that same task is no longer under the domain of an architect? And if that discipline or skill was needed and was needed to be signed off on a certain construction plan, that now the architect couldn't sign for it and the interior designer would now have to sign for it? Did you understand my question?
Through the chair, yes, I understand your question. And there are provisions in House Bill 61 that would let architects do everything that is defined under the bill for interior designers, because in fact architects already do all those things. So they're not taking, the bill is not taking away from that authority that architects already have. You are also correct in your summary of how a project is stamped and handled within an office. Again, there are a lot of interior designers who work in offices in Alaska. There are also ones who work independently. So for the ones who work in offices, it would be up to that office structure to decide who stamps plans. It could be an interior designer that would stamp the applicable interior design sheets. It could be an architect that would stamp those. That would be up to the firm to decide, and it relates to corporate authorization, and it relates to where the liability and responsibilities of the projects are, and frankly, a lot of the experience and expertise of the project itself, and sometimes client input. Sometimes clients will want, certain things certain ways. So that's very individual and could be decided at a firm level. The new thing that this would offer is that interior designers would be able to work totally on their own, in their own office, as they do now, but they would be able to stamp plans that could then be issued for building permits. They would then be taking all of the personal liability, or project liability, personal or professional, that relates to that. They would be able to work as a prime consultant. So they would be able to do what architects do in terms of having, sometimes an architect will have a half a dozen or more sub-consultants underneath them, and they are responsible for making sure everything gets coordinated, even the legally responsible, because if someone's going to sue them, if there's a problem, they're going to start with suing the architect. They're not going to go, you know, three tiers down to the geologist who did the investigation of the soil. So it would put interior designers in that same position. They would be able to have an unlimited number of sub-consultants. Now, I should note that interior designers are not trained as vigorously. There may be some introduction to the idea of multi-tier project management in some interior design courses, but it's typically not as robust, and in practice it's not done as robustly, primarily because they don't have that legal authority right now. But some states have put a control point on interior designers that they do not let them have more than X number of subconsultants working under them. So there are ways to address those within a statute that is not included in this bill.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and thank you for that answer. I guess going back to my first question about the definition of the scope of practice and what you said, that a interior designer working on their own, independently in their own office, can draw plans and stamp them for essentially anything under their scope of practice. So is your concern that by broadening the scope of practice, or by having the definition, in your opinion, to be too broad, that now an independent interior designer could design and sign off on plans that maybe goes into areas that you don't necessarily think they're qualified to sign off on?
Through the chair, that would be the specific concern, and I want to make it clear that that is not a specific concern that has been talked about by our board and acted on it in the official way, but there have been conversations about that because of the lack of checks and balances within this bill and because of the broad definition in this bill.
Last question.
Yes, follow up.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer. And lastly, you mentioned there's approximately two dozen interior designers that would fall under the description in this bill. Do you know how many others wouldn't, and you know what that number is? And they're probably not, I don't know how you count them, and how would this impact their, and if you don't know, that's fine, how would this impact their business? Would they be a big rush to go get licensing or qualify to take the test?
Through the chair, the reference to the couple dozen people comes from the NCIDQ website, where they actually list the number of people in various jurisdictions. I believe it's by state, but they also include some of Canadian provinces. And there are, last time I checked was a year ago, and I think there were 22 or something who were noted as people with that NCIDQ test certification. And there were about two dozen of them at that time. So that's where that loose data comes from. There could very well be people who meet the qualifications who are not registered with NCIDQ for any particular reason. As to the businesses that exist out there, I personally have Googled, Interior Design Alaska, and seen lots of businesses pop up. Whether or not the particular individuals who own and operate those businesses, what their backgrounds are and how they would be affected, I don't know. But it's I'm not sure if that information has been pursued to find out, exactly how this bill would impact existing businesses. I'm just not aware of that.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I take a step back just for a second, and this, I think this question is for Catherine. Ms. Fritz, do you, is the, that you talked about the five recommendations or the five points that the board came up with. I'm taking it to mean that there's some consensus about the five positions, but because there's no position on the bill means there's not like a unanimous consent consensus on the board's part as to which direction to go with the bill.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Carpenter. That is exactly the case. We, as the Legislative Liaison Committee last year, had talked about doing a markup of this bill to express, you know, maybe propose some language of what we felt would address these concerns. However, some board members and committee members were concerned that by doing such a markup, it would imply that the board supports the bill, and we have not officially taken action to support or oppose the bill, just because of concerns that it, you know, may not be our purview to do so. We are here to do our best job at regulating whatever laws you as a legislature pass, and we don't want to step on those toes. But we do have some expertise that we hope might be able to be tapped if the legislature decides this bill is a good idea.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think maybe the keeping the peace on the board is one of the challenges of the leadership of the board. Does the board currently have the authority to better define the boundary between architectural practice and interior design practice through regulation or recommendation of statute change?
Through the chair, yes. And Director Chambers can speak to this more specifically, but we absolutely work on regulatory change all the time. It wouldn't be in our purview right now to clarify the role of interior design because we don't have that statute, so we don't have any regulations. But in terms of proposing statute, yes, we do propose statute. In fact, we are working on a cleanup package right now that we hope will be in front of you next session. So the board is very much involved in proposing statute and regulation on an ongoing basis.
Yes, follow up.
Can the board currently, under the current statute, create a requirement for interior designers to receive or obtain a CIDQ license or some other model of license? Or are you don't have the authority to do that?
Through the chair, we don't have the authority to do that. We have no definition of interior design and no statute that guides those regulations.
Representative Carpenter.
That's it for right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Fritz, it looks like in your point five in your letter that you've been talking about, that you've got some alternatives that could work and it could help this bill to be something that's more usable by all people involved. And are there other items that you can think of in, similar to Article 5 of your letter that could help make this a workable piece of legislation that would be usable by all and happily used by all?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Thompson. I'm kind of speaking personally right now rather than for the board, in that, yes, we could definitely, there's definitely cleanup language that we would like to work with someone on to make it better than it is now. We could rely on what other states have done with interior design. There's only a handful that have practice acts. In fact, I believe there's only three other states plus the District of Columbia. So we don't have a big base to go from, but we would certainly try to choose the best that we could get from that. There is no model law within CIDQ or other organization that would help structure a good interior design bill. But we could give it our best shot within that framework. And then on a personal note, you know, as an architect and a, you know, 39 or 40 year member of the AIA, American Institute of Architects, I do know that there is ongoing and very serious and conversation about really wanting to work with the interior designers to find something that would work for both entities, you know, both bodies, both the architects and the interior designers. And there have been numerous efforts by the architects to say, hey, can we talk about a different type of regulation? For example, the way that home inspectors and geologists are regulated. And there's other ideas, but they have not been receptive to those ideas to this point.
Representative Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to went back again and looked at the letter that has been provided by the current chair of the board, and I think it's important for the committee to understand that the letter that the committee has received is not from the board. It is from the chair of the board, reflecting not a decision of any kind by the board, but actually simply a report from the legislative liaison committee. And so the two-page document you're receiving is a document from the legislative liaison committee on which Ms. Fritz sits, and two others that are also a member of that committee are on board with those comments. But the board itself, I mean, this is kind of similar to a legislative committee hearing a bill and passing the bill out and saying what, but it never made it to the floor. This particular document and the letter, the cover letter that comes with it, makes it abundantly clear that they are following the bill and they are interested in the bill, but there has never been official action taken by the AELS board on this bill. And the suggestion that she's speaking on behalf of the board is she's speaking in her own capacity. I mean, she's perfectly capable of doing that and should be allowed to do that, but I don't believe she's speaking on behalf of the board and hasn't been authorized to do so. And the letter, these comments are from a subcommittee of the board, but not the board itself. The other thing I just want to note, there's some of the discussion, and this is respective to paragraph 5 of the comments that have been provided by the legislative committee, and that's really this debate between whether to approve a practice act or a title act. And the distinction between a practice act and a title act is that a practice act is what actually gives an interior designer the ability to stamp documents within their scope of practice, and the title act would allow them to have recognition for their profession, but they would not get the authority to stamp documents. And from a construction standpoint, having the ability to stamp documents within the field of practice is really the core debate that we're having here. And I think that's why we've seen so many other design professionals supporting this bill.
Great, thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I want to go back to another question just to clarify. If this bill were to pass, are there interior designers that are currently operating without a CIDQ license that would then be in jeopardy of not being able to continue working?
Through the chair, from a personal standpoint of a Google search a year ago, I would answer yes. I cannot answer that in the capacity of the licensing board.
Ms. Chambers, are you able to answer that question? If you would please come forward and place yourself on the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And fortunately, my staff is listening, and they've been feeding me some numbers, so I have some answers for you. In regards to Representative Carpenter's question just a moment ago, according to our business licensing records, we have 320 interior designers who have recorded their line of business as interior design. We don't track whether that line of business might include an architect or someone who could continue to stamp those documents, but it's given what we've seen when new licensing professions have been added by the legislature, there are people who are currently doing what's in the scope of practice that will no longer be able to do it without the license. So we would expect probably a large portion of them to need to get licensed in order to continue to do that work. As has been pointed out before, if you're an interior decorator, you are not covered by, this has nothing to do with you, but if you are working on the definition of commercial interior design, then you would be required to get a license.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Do you have a number on how many licensed architects the state has?
I do have that. For fiscal year, through the chair, Representative Carpenter, for fiscal year 21, we ended the year with, let's see, there are about 15 professions under this board right now. Just about 600 professional architects.
Follow up?
Make it a different line. I think this is probably for Ms. Fritz. In the last 5 years, I'm just picking 5 years out of the air here, has the board discussed any regulatory or statutory changes that would define the responsibilities between the architect and the interior design, or discussed ways to move forward with stamping authority of some sort, or how interior design changes to either regulations or statute might allow interior design to regulate their profession? Has the board discussed those topics?
Through the chair, yes, we have. I've been on the board about 6 years now, and for at least five of those years, there have been discussions with the interior designers. Initially, they came to us fairly frequently with several meetings a few years ago to put out this idea that they wanted to get registered, and most of the concerns, if not all of the concerns that we've raised today, were raised at that time, and we just didn't, they just weren't able to or weren't interested in really sitting down and going through the proposed bill with us. There was no proposed bill at the time, and one of the things we actually said was, you know, get a piece of legislation that we can work from and come back, and that wasn't able to happen or didn't happen. But we have tried to be very open to their ideas. There has been, a warm welcome each time that they have come to the board to try to express their concerns, but we were never able to actually work with them on any legislation.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, and that's only partially answers my question. I'm looking at the makeup of the board right now, and I see engineers, architects, I don't see anybody that's on the board and has a say from the interior design community. Okay, so you can understand my intuition here is telling me that maybe perhaps there's a group of people here that doesn't actually want to solve the problem. Just hypothetically, if that is the case, then I would ask the question, has the board discussed and provide recommendations regardless of whether the interior designers agree or not? Have you produced something that says, hey, this is the way, the direction that we, the board, all of the, and it's the two civil engineers, two land surveyors, one mining engineer, one electrical or mechanical engineer, one engineer from another branch, two architects, one landscape architect, and one public member. If there's member of the industry that says, hey, we would like to see some change, has the board provided some recommendations regardless of whether the interior designers agree or not?
Through the chair, we as a board have not taken any official action on the specific opposition or support of this bill, as I've already mentioned. Our legislative liaison committee has been actively looking at the bill for a couple years now and trying hard to, you know, bring issues up that would be able to be collaboratively solved, but that has not been able to happen yet. And I mean, the letter that was sent to you in January was from our past chair, Elizabeth Johnston. She's an electrical engineer and fire protection engineer. And I did serve on the legislative liaison committee at that time. I did step down from that role when I became chair. I'm not currently on the legislative liaison committee, but there's been something about HB 61 for, you know, over a year now on every agenda of our board, and trying hard to find out, you know, how can we, you know, make it clear where our concerns are without necessarily driving this topic, because we don't necessarily, to this point, we haven't been feeling like it's our topic to put a yay or nay on. Now, I'm sure I would be glad, our next meeting is coming up in May, and I would be glad to put it on the agenda if this committee feels it's important for the board to take a stance in support or opposition of this bill, or the general topic, since, you know, that this bill's life may be more limited. I would be glad to push that forward if there is a direction that is feels that would be helpful and appropriate to do.
Follow up?
Yes, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I am glad to hear that if this committee suggested a course of action that you would take action. I wonder if the Interior Design Committee community asked for you to take action, would the action be taken? I think the evidence is over the last few years that there's either slow rolling or dragging feet by board members of the board that by what we've talked about earlier, that there's not a consensus on which direction to go, and therefore nothing happens. And we've got a particular portion of the industry now that are coming to the legislature to say, hey, we need a bill to solve a problem because the board isn't solving it. We want to define our responsibilities. We want some sort of stamping authority, and we want to regulate our profession, and yet the board has failed to put forward any sort of recommendation over the number of years that this issue has been addressed and brought up to them. So this is the avenue to make the changes that you say that you're not empowered to deal with, and yet you're not taking a stance on it. I see a very large inconsistency on the board's purpose for dealing with the industry, and lack of care to take a stance on this particular bill. So anyway, I don't know if that's a question or whether that's just a statement.
Representative Klayman?
I just wanted one question for Ms. Chambers. The people that register with your division as interior designers, do you distinguish between residential interior designers and commercial interior designers? And if so, what's the breakdown between the two?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, business licensing doesn't make that differentiation. So this is a business license, not a professional license. So interior designers select from the NAICS code list of professional services, and then there's just an interior design code that they identify with. So right now, because this profession isn't regulated by the state, then there's no cause to ask for that information, and so we don't have it. And I think if I could, Madam Chair, that supports I think some of the question that might be related to Representative Carpenter's concerns, is that the AELS board doesn't currently oversee interior designers, and they don't regulate this profession, and so there may be some disconnect in seeing a fiduciary responsibility to put forward legislation. And I'm just speculating because I'm not familiar with how many times this has come up before the board. I know since we've been talking to the interior designers for about 5 years over options that they could pursue, but the AELS board doesn't oversee interior designers, so they may not see utilizing their resources to put forward something that usually in the course of history and industry profession itself would put forward. That just, it's my speculation on some disconnect to add some context.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. And I think it would be also valid to point out that while the board may not have statutory authority, they might have the power to recommend changes that would give them that statutory authority, especially considering that there are architects who employ interior designers, and interior designers at this point are reliant 100% on architects for any sort of recommendation on the board to grant interior designers any sort of definition of responsibilities of the areas between architecture and interior design, or stamping authority, or regulation of their own profession. They're completely reliant upon architects to do that. They've got no voice. So it's easy for the architects to say, hey, we don't have the authority. Right, that's part of the problem.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Yes, if I might, first through the chair, from Ms. Chambers. Ms. Chambers, it looks like President Thompson wants in the queue.
He's in the queue.
Are there any ways the bill could have been written short of offering special or offering licensure that would have expanded the area of practice for commercial designers, interior designers? In other words, is there some, we're looking at two models, the status quo, I guess, and this bill. Is there some other variation?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that's always one of the more creative and interesting parts of what we get to do, is look at a variety of ways to get to yes, I suppose. And one area that that I've discussed with the interior designers was not going the route of licensure, where someone has to fill out forms, meet deadlines, pay money, possibly become investigated, add to a staff workload, but to put an exemption in statute that says if you hold a CIDQ certification, then you can do these things. And that way it would get them out of the government growth oversight loop, and it would let them, if they held that certification for life, health, and safety training, which isn't under debate, it would give them the freedom to do that without having to go through a mother may I with our office.
Yes, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, for Ms. Fritz, you said that your board has not taken a formal position, I think is essentially what you said, but your legislative committee pretty clearly has some concerns, correct?
Through the chair, yes, that is correct.
And we talked briefly at the outset of the hearing about a North Carolina effort. And I have that statute in front of me. It seems more prescriptive than Section 32. Have you seen the North Carolina language?
Through the chair, yes, I have. I've not looked at it recently, but yes, I do know that there are some specific references to that distinguish interior design from architecture. I recall that. I'd have to look it again to get more familiar. And if I could please clarify my last statement, that the letter, we'd have to go back on the board minutes to be clear, but I'm working from memory, but I believe what happened at our November meeting when we as a board took action to authorize the chair, Elizabeth Johnston, to write a cover letter and reinforce by resending the points that we had made last year. So I believe that the cover letter may not fully reflect the action that was taken by the board as a whole to move these points to you. They were intended to be done as a board.
Follow-up?
Yeah, new question.
Yes, Representative Josephson.
In our extensive packet through the chair, Ms. Fritz, there is a letter from the Alaska Professional Design Council, and the member societies include the American Institute of Architects. And the American Institute of Architects, at least speaking as a member society, I guess, of Professional Design Council, supports the bill. But we Alaska is an open question. Should we or should we not assume that the AIA, or at least the Alaska chapter, speaks for architects writ large? It pretty clearly doesn't, but can you help me understand that?
Through the chair, yes, I'd be glad to. The American Institute of Architects is a professional organization, just like the other organizations that are under the umbrella of APDC. And it is not mandatory that you are part of that professional organization to participate as a registered architect or engineer. So they are separate entities for the design profession. So yes, one has a professional society business hat on, and the other are licensed, are regulated licenses, are, you know, focused on public health, safety, and welfare.
Thank you. We'll take final questions from Representative Thompson and then Wool.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Representative Klayman, you're correct on the attached points that have been brought in. That was from a meeting of October 28th by the Legislative Committee. But the reason it was brought up was because the January 26th on the board letterhead to the state of Alaska. So we assume, and I felt like that maybe that is part of why Fritz brought this up, was that there's a lot of concerns, obviously, and it hasn't been worked out. There are solutions that could be possibly drawn together in changing this bill to where it could work for everybody. But right now, I feel like this needs some work to try to get it to where everybody's going to be satisfied with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This is a question for Ms. Chambers. And she mentioned that if this bill were to pass, the interior designers would all have to be licensed through a board. I guess I'm just curious. It was mentioned there's around, say, 30 that are qualified through the CDIQ, I think it is, through certification, or not licensure, but some sort of professional recognition. So there's 320 interior designers, and granted, they're not all working on commercial projects. Some are residential. Some are probably both. I mean, I'm sure commercial can work on residential. I don't know about the other way around. So let's say there's, you know, a couple hundred. Does this mean that everyone, I'm just trying to understand licensure requirements. I'm told they could still work without the license, but an architect would have to sign off on it, which they currently have to anyways. I'm just wondering, for like a few hundred interior designers, does that mean that they have to, how many of them, do they have to rush off and take the CDIQ test, or is there another test of licensure that the state will now administer and have them certified? Is that how that works?
Through the chair, Representative Wool. So my understanding of the bill is that anyone who wants to perform the work in Section 32, which is limited to commercial interior design, would need to get CIDQ certified, so they'd have to go take those courses, and then they would have to apply for that exam and licensure in the state, unless they had an architect who was signing standing sealing for them. So it really, they could continue to do that work, but if they wanted to do that work independently of an architect, they would have to get certified and then licensed. And you're correct that they're, the 320 is anyone who says, I'm an interior designer. It could be that one of them is a commercial interior designer, and it could be that all of them are. We just don't know. If they are performing, if we are to interpret the bill as the section about public occupancy to mean a commercial building, which I think is the intent, is that then a residential interior designer would not be regulated, would not require a license, but a public building where the public can come in and out, then they would if they're going to do this work without an architect.
Follow up?
Yeah, so thank you for that explanation. And I guess, and maybe no one can answer this question, or Ms. Fritz, it's unknown, but if this were to pass, and I'm an interior designer that works for a firm, would there be pressure for me to be licensed like everyone else in the firm is licensed, the engineers and the architects, seeing as it's now available, and maybe their customers, their clients would say, well, do you all have a stamp that's going to stamp off on these plans instead of just an architect stamping for the interior designer. And I guess that's a hypothetical situation, but and maybe Ms. Fritz wants to try to answer that one and or Representative Klayman. But I don't know what the repercussions, if there would be, well, you don't really need the license, but we kind of want you to have one, and how much of that is going to happen.
Representative Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the Chair, Representative Wolf, what I've consistently heard about this from the consumer standpoint, specifically the consumer of commercial buildings, is that there would be a real interest in the customer in having licensed interior designers, because in just the hard realities, architects charge a higher hourly fee than interior designers. And so if you had a commercial design project, say interior walls that weren't load-bearing, and you wanted somebody to stamp it and get that approved, for the customer, it's less expensive to have the interior designer stamp the drawings than have the architect, because they get to bill out. I mean, it's no different than the 30-year lawyer and the 5-year lawyer. The hourly fees are significantly different, and so there's a real interest on the consumer side in having the architecture offices being able to say, this is what the architect stamps, let the interior design stamp things that we don't need to have the architects involved in. And I think even for that reason, there will be interest in architects' offices as well, why you see several architecture firms supporting Bill, because they see this as an opportunity for them to offer a broader range of services to their clients. And so I don't think they could say, you must get the certification, but I think there would be real interest in architects' office having that available.
Last comment. Thank you.
Well,
you brought up an interesting concept, which underlies a lot of these bills that have different professional groups, and that what you just mentioned was the situation where one group will now take on a responsibility that previously was only available from another group, and that's stamping a certain type of design. And you mentioned non-load-bearing walls. I don't know if that's in the scope of practice, but and that some architects might like that and some might not, so I guess that's the rub, like naturopaths and medical doctors or optometry, ophthalmology, and so on. So, yeah, I guess that explains a lot of the written testimony we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Klayman? Okay, with that, we are going to stand at ease until 3:05 p.m.
House Finance on the record at 3:05 p.m. We are going to move to House Bill 307, Extend Bond Authority for Interior Energy Projects by Representative Hopkins. We will return to House Bill 61 after completion of this bill. There are quite a few people online to testify on that bill, and I want to make sure everyone has time. So with that, Representative Hopkins, welcome back. We heard this bill on April 8th, and amendments were due to my office on the 13th, and we received none. Would you like to make an opening statement, Representative Hopkins?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee for having us back up here. This is an important piece of legislation for the Fairbanks area as we look to expand our gas supply and access to different businesses and residential neighborhoods, as well as ensuring that we have a stable supply going into the future. This piece of legislation would allow the Interior Gas Utility to utilize the ADA bonding authority to be able to utilize that expansion if they need to bond to expand their capacity and network, which would also then be on the risk of the ratepayers to pay for this piece of legislation. I believe we have Dan Britton, the executive director for the Interior Gas Utility, to be able to pay any or answer any questions, and I make myself available as well. This is an extension. This language has been in effect since 2013, when the Interior Energy Project was passed. Representative Thompson and former Senator Pete Kelly carried this, the last extension, which was in 2017, and the sunset date for the authority is in June of 2023. And so this would be an additional 5 years extension to June 30th of 2028. So that's all it would be. Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair, and I'm available for any questions, as well as Executive Director Mr. Britton.
Great, thank you. Are there questions? Seeing none, we will move to public testimony. I'm opening public testimony on House Bill 307. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 307? Seeing none, we will move online. It looks like we have Jomo Stewart from Fairbanks with Fairbanks Economic Development. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Jomo Stewart. I have the honor, actually, of being the president and CEO of the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation. I also had the honor of being the former general manager of the Interior Gas Utility. And FBDC and myself are longtime supporters of the Interior Gas Utility and, of course, the Interior Energy Project. And I wanted to go on record and voice our support for HB 307, extending the bonding authority relative to the IEP. Things, you know, sometimes, particularly with large projects, take a bit longer than we'd like. And yet, you know, the IGU has racked up significant successes over recent years and continues to make significant progress relative to achieving its goal of lower cost, cleaning, burning energy alternatives, which is natural gas, to as many Fairbanks residents as possible, as quickly as possible. I would note that with the community currently experiencing high oil prices equal to or higher than the very worst days of the former energy crisis, it is critical that IGU be allowed to maintain access to capital that it may need to expand service. And so I do want to thank, and FEDC wants to thank the committee for acting to ensure that it may. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. I see no questions. We appreciate you taking time to call in. Is there anyone else in the room or online wishing to testify? Seeing none, I'm closing public testimony on House Bill 307. We do have one fiscal note from ADA, control code TAYOV. And it looks like we have Mr. Weisner from ADA online to go over the fiscal note. Mr. Weisner, welcome back. If you could please put yourself on the record and review the fiscal note.
Thank you very much, Chair. This is Alan Weisner, Executive Director with ADA. On the fiscal note, we know that there is no fiscal impact, at least what we're recognizing, with the extension of the current bonding capacity for IEP.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we appreciate you being here, Mr. Weitzner. Is there any other discussion on House Bill 307? Seeing none, Mr. Co-Chair, is there a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 307, version 32-LS1409/A from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize Legislative Legal Services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, House Bill 307 is moved from committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee. Get
thank
out of here.
Thank you, Representative. Taking a brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 3:13 p.m. We are now moving back to House Bill 61, and we are going to take public testimony on House Bill 61 at this time. I'm opening public testimony. I will remind callers that public testimony is limited to 2 minutes and encourage folks that would like to send written testimony. It can be sent to house.finance@akleg.gov. With that, is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 61? Seeing none, we will move online. Our first testifier is Barbara Cash with the American Society of Interior Designers. Welcome, Ms. Cash, if you could state your name, affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Barbara Cash, and I am an Alaska commercial interior designer.
Great, thank you. Please begin your testimony.
I strongly support House Bill 61. It is good for Alaska. We all want the same thing, Alaska buildings to be designed by registered professionals educated to protect public life safety inside and out, including commercial interior designers. HB 61 will accomplish this. It establishes professional registration and defines our scope of work already familiar to many clients, architects, and building officials. It requires qualifications that parallel those of Alaska engineers, architects, land surveyors, and landscape architects, including bachelor's degree or equivalent in interior design, work experience under a registered interior designer or architect, and successful completion of the three-part national interior design exam. HB 61 responds to Alaska's workforce crisis. It will increase the professional workforce, meet capital projects and budgets, attract qualified designers, grow small business, and give registered commercial interior designers responsibility for their own work. It does not apply to architects, and per Section 331 exemption does not apply to interior designers of single-family to fourplex residences or those working under supervision of a registered design professional, such as a commercial interior designer or architect. I ask you to please support House Bill, and thank you so much for your time and consideration today.
Thank you, Ms. Cash. We appreciate you calling in. Let the record reflect, at 3:14 p.m., we were joined online by Representative LeBon, and we have a question from Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Cash, do you have a industry certification or license?
Yes, I have. It's not a license. It is a certification. I have a degree, a bachelor's degree in interior design, and I have passed the NCIDQ exam that is referenced.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will move to Arlington, Virginia. Matthew Baruch with the Council on Interior Design Qualification. Welcome to House Finance. Please state your name, affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Merrick. Members of the committee, my name is Matthew Baruch with the Council for Interior Design Qualification. Our organization has administered the NCIDQ exam, the nationally recognized interior design certification exam, since 1974. Our mission is to protect the public and the built environment through interior design competency assessment, something our organization takes very seriously. Our membership is comprised of state regulatory boards, much like our counterparts in design field credentialing, in which the AELS board has membership, including the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards. CIDQ is prepared and committed to working with the AELS board and staff, as we do with all our member boards, to implement this bill to protect health, safety, and welfare, and ensure that practicing commercial interior designers in Alaska are trained and competent. We have several resources on our exam and eligibility requirements available to the committee and to the board, including the recent joint comparison report mentioned as referenced by Mr. Maynard. I'm also available as a resource to the committee and answering any questions about the NCIDQ exam, and I ask the committee to vote yes on this important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baruch. We appreciate you calling in. Are there questions from the committee? Seeing none, next in Anchorage with the American Institute of Architects is Jessica Cederberg. Welcome, Ms. Cederberg. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony. Ms. Cederberg, are you on mute?
Sorry, I was on mute.
That's okay. If you could state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Jessica Cederberg, and I am a lifelong Alaskan who is registered architect in Alaska. I've been practicing architecture for over 25 years. I currently sit on the American Institute of Architects Alaska Chapter Board, and I'm a member of the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards. I'm opposed to this practice act because of its lack of clarity in what commercial interior design covers compared to currently licensed architects and engineers. The proposed legislation contains terms and definitions for commercial interior design that do not align with current licensing and construction permitting practices in the state of Alaska. The words commercial, public occupancy, code compliant, internal circulation systems are all terms that are not used in the current AELS statute. This bill fails to clearly define the practice of commercial interior design. There is no shared understanding of the practice, but rather a broad paint stroke, brush stroke, across the board of architecture and engineering, and will likely create confusion for local officials, contractors, designers, and the general public. Only three states in the U.S. currently regulate the practice of interior design. Michigan and Florida repealed their practice acts. Over half the states in the country have a statute in the form of a title act. American Institute of Architects Alaska chapter supports a title act. House Bill 61 will cause concerning issues due to overlap in all the gray areas and will result in more investigations unless it is modified to clearly define what interior design can and cannot do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cederberg. We appreciate you calling in today. We have a question from Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you see the problem that you have with the term commercial interior design is that it's not, it's too broad, or what's your specific concern? Because to me, I read it as an attempt to narrow the guidelines of what a interior design professional would be able to do rather than broaden. In other words, I would think it's an attempt to put them in a lane rather than a broadening their duties. How would you respond to that?
Thank you. I feel that the current bill, the way it's written, it's too broad, and there's too many areas, too many gray areas and overlapping of duties, in my professional opinion.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Cederberg. We appreciate your time today. Next in Anchorage is Elizabeth Goebel. Welcome to House Finance. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony. Ms. Goebel, are you on mute? We will come back to Ms. Goebel. Next, from Oxford, Ohio, is Catherine Setzer. Welcome to House Finance. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Catherine Setzer, an NCIDQ certified interior designer, researcher, and educator from Oxford, Ohio. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 61. I'm a technical advisor and co-developer of five building safety and fire codes, including the National Fire Protection Association's NFPA 101 life safety code. It's used in every state, including Alaska. The proper specification of interior materials, finishes, and content are essential to public safety during a fire or any other emergency. It's simple. The faster a fire develops, the greater the threat to occupants and their ability to exit safely. Interior designers must understand requirements for fire ratings of partition walls, door assemblies, as well as interior finish and content that slows flame and toxic smoke spread across floors, walls, and ceilings, and provides precious time for occupants to evacuate. This is especially important because frequently interior design projects are completed outside the requirements for building permits or other oversight. We do a great deal of renovation space. This is fundamental and unique to the specialized expertise of the commercial interior designer and an essential component of any code-regulated environment. I urge your support for this necessary regulation, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. We appreciate you calling in today. Question from Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. You mentioned fire design and designing for fire and safety. Architects currently do that and can sign off on it as currently that's what's happening.
Ms. Setzer?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Did you hear Representative Wool's question?
Yes, architects currently sign off on this work. In cases where a building permit is required, there are all kinds of cases where the project is potentially small or materials are being replaced because
I'll just tell
issues. Yeah.
Great, thank you. We will try going back to Elizabeth Goebel in Anchorage. Ms. Goebel, are you available? Okay, I do not hear. We shall move down the list. Next is Larry Cash in Oklahoma City. Welcome, Mr. Cash, to House Finance, if you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
Good afternoon, committee and co-chairs. I hope you can hear me.
We sure can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Larry Cash, and I'm asking you to pass HB 21. I'm a registered architect in Alaska since 1978, and I founded my firm, Rim Architects, here in 1986. As a member of the American Institute of Architects since 1978, and now a fellow in the AIA, it is very important for me to voice my emphatic support for HB 61. This support comes from my years of experience working with experts, including commercial interior designers. For me, this is all about making our buildings as safe as possible. HB 61 will result in safer buildings. It is my duty as an architect belonging to the AIA to assemble and lead a team of the best experts for every project that I'm responsible for. Designing buildings that are safe for the public requires credentialed, registered experts such as structural, mechanical, electrical, civil engineers, land surveyors, and landscape architects. Commercial interior designers have a focused, higher level of expertise with interior finishes products regarding fire, smoke, infection control, and toxicity that most registered architects, including myself, don't have that kind of expertise. The specialized knowledge improves the safety of our buildings. I want to have the option to include registered professional commercial interior designers as integrated members of my team so that our buildings are as safe as possible. Bottom line, I ask you to help make buildings in Alaska as safe as possible by passing HB 61. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cash. We have questions from Representative Ortiz and then Wool. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Cash. Have you been listening in to this previous hearing today and heard specifically about the concerns raised by the Alaska State Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors concerning the bill? Are you familiar with that testimony that occurred previously today?
Yes, I have been online listening in to this hearing from the get-go. And I did hear AELS, their comments.
And so with that and the fact that you are an architect, yet you're much more supportive of the bill, can you maybe weigh in on, from your perspective as to why there would be this difference of opinion on the bill from fellow architects that that are here working in the state of Alaska?
I can't speak for others, and as my testimony indicated, I'm speaking for myself here, and I am coming from the perspective of safety. I believe this bill will enhance the safety characteristics of buildings in Alaska, and I believe it is needed, and, you know, I just think now is the time to move this forward and do everything we can to make our buildings as safe as we possibly can.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Cash, the first caller that called in was Barbara Cash. She's an interior designer. Is there a connection, or is that just coincidence?
There is a very strong connection. Barbara Cash is my wife of 43 years.
Follow-up?
Can I gather, do you have a professional connection? How does she work? Do you work together?
We don't work together currently. She's retired. We have worked together over the years on many projects through her independent interior design practice and my architectural firm collaborating and working together to do good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cash, and we congratulate you on 43 years of marriage. Next, we will move to Anchorage. Kara Rood, welcome to House Finance. Please state your name, affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
My name is Kara Rood, and I am representing myself. I am in support of House Bill 61. When I became an owner of the longest established and among the largest architectural practices in Alaska, the lack of professional registration for interior designers became an impediment, and our firm had to restructure from a professional corporation to an LLC. This bill reflects the reality of the design marketplace. Accelerated construction timelines and constant technology advancements have led to the demand for interior designers to provide a focused skill set and education on environments to support human health, material chemistry, such as mentioned before, toxicity and flammability, and public life safety. After listening today, I'd also like to add that the federal government actually recognizes the NCIDQ certification as a standard for what they refer to as their structural interior design. For over a decade, I have designed facilities for our national security across the nation, including in our great state of Alaska. And those qualifications to provide structural interior design for those projects can only be done by a designer that holds an NCIDQ certification. And there is a distinction between the architectural scope on federal projects and the interior design scope. And I thought that might be helpful to hear, though we are not talking about a federal issue, that is encompassing. And I'd be happy to answer more questions on that. In closing, I would just like to say I do believe House Bill 61 will lead to better built environments and safeguard an elevated design marketplace for our consumers. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Rood. Do we have any questions of the committee? I see no questions, so thank you for calling in. Next, we have Ryan Morse calling in from Fairbanks. If you can put yourself on the record, state your name, your affiliation, and proceed with your two-minute testimony. Mr. Morse, are you there? Okay, we'll come back to Mr. Morse. So next we've got Mary Kana, or I don't think I'm saying the last name right. Ms. Mary, if you're online, if you can state your name and your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
I actually am driving right now, and I wondered if I could postpone until I get to my destination.
Sure, we'll come back to you in maybe, do you think 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
Probably 15.
15. Okay, we'll do. Okay, and next we'll go over to Abigail Cron, calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to express my support of House Bill 61. I am an NCIDQ certified interior designer, born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska, currently practicing for over 15 years. The Council for Interior Design, CIDA, which has been talked a lot about today, is an independent nonprofit accrediting organization for interior design education programs at colleges and universities in the U.S. and internationally. They set the standards which reflect the continuous development of the practice and the expanding body of knowledge in the field. CIDA standards cover interdisciplinary collaboration and project management, business practices and professional ethics, communication and documentation, building and environmental systems, construction and building, fire, life safety, and accessibility regulations and guidelines. Accredited interior design education is appropriately rigorous and relevant to the practice of interior design in code-related public occupied spaces and prepares graduates to safeguard public health, safety, and welfare of the built environment. Please support House Bill 61. Thank you for your time.
Great, thank you. And can you state your name and your affiliation again? I may have missed it.
That's okay. It's Abigail Crone, and I'm affiliated with myself, no organization.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Okay, and I don't see any questions of the committee. And for Mary, who's listening, I just want to let you know, I think we've only got one or two more people online here, just to give you a heads up, and then we'll come back to you. So next we have Jeff Garness calling in from Anchorage. Mr. Garness, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Hi, hello. My name is Jeff Garness, and actually I'm co-chair of the AELS board. I'm a civil engineer, environmental engineer. I'm not speaking as a board member. I'm speaking as a private citizen. What I'm really interested in is what's really driving HB 61? Is it public health, safety, and welfare? Or is it really the financial interest of a small group of interior designers that will ultimately then end up charging more for their profession as they become, individually licensed? Normally, within the professions that we cover, that are covered under the AELS board, for example, civil engineering used to include surveying, environmental engineering, structural engineering, and over the years, as those fields became more specialized and whatnot, they branched off and they became, subcategories of, or they became their own a branch of engineering. But in each case, they all had a specific, real significant public health, safety, and welfare aspect to them, whether it was fire protection engineering or control systems engineering. And I think that when we talk about public safety, and health and welfare, I think we can find a component to it in almost any profession. But the reality is, do we have enough of a component to it in the interior design field to carve off and create a separate branch within the AELS board? And I think that's something we really need to ask. I mean, over the years, where have the problems been coming up? And are we having significant problems with, related to public health, safety, and welfare regarding any aspect of interior design work coming into the AELS board? I don't know the answer to that, but I think those are important questions that have to be asked. Or are we just creating another branch within the of architecture, or not architecture, its own field under the AELS board, without really any justification of a significant public health, welfare, and safety aspect to it? Again, I think you can find that in almost any discipline or any field, but it needs to be significant enough to carve out its own aspect on the AELS board. So I would ask that you consider that. The other thing I'm concerned about with this HB 61 is if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's trying to grant a specific board seat on the board, add a couple other seats, I believe, for an electrical engineer and mechanical engineer. But it's going to end up with granting a specific board seat to serve like 25 people. And so I think that those are things that need to be considered. It's an expense that, with traveling to the various annual meetings and things like that, that's going to cost to other registrants out of our annual licensing fees and whatnot for a very small little group of people that we have to ask, is this really a public health, safety, and welfare issue? Or is it really have something to do with financial interests of a very small group of people? So at this point, I can speak out that I individually do not support HB 61, and I ask you to go back and look at it and really ask, is this the avenue for interior designers? And maybe there's some other avenue that would be more appropriate for them.
Great.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Garness. I don't see any questions of the committee. And so with that, we'll go back to some of the other folks that we were going to round back to. Elizabeth Goble, are you there?
Good afternoon, co-chairs Merrick and Foster, members of the committee. Thank you for your opportunity to express my support of House Bill 61. My name is Elizabeth Goble. I'm a recent transplant to Alaska and a junior interior designer at an Anchorage architectural firm, currently gaining work experience required to qualify for the internationally recognized NCIDQ credentialing exam for interior designers. House Bill 61 proposes reasonable regulation to protect public health, safety, and welfare by establishing professional registration for interior designers qualified by education, experience, and examination to practice independently with stamp and seal privileges, all within a specific and limited scope of work for which we are trained to do. please vote in favor of House Bill 61. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And we've got a question from Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So sorry if I missed this earlier. Do you have any industry certification?
Not at this time. I do not. I'm a recent graduate.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we will next go over to Ryan Morris, calling from Fairbanks. If you're there, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Morris. I'm an architect with the American Institute of Architects, and I currently live and practice in Fairbanks, Alaska. I appreciate the opportunity with the committee to state my personal opposition to HB 61. And before I go on, I also wanted to clarify a point that was discussed earlier regarding the AIA and its membership with APDC. AIA is not a member of APDC, and at no point in time has the AIA endorsed this bill or the acts by APDC to support this bill. In my experience, both as the board president for AIA Alaska, as well as the AIA National Strategic Council chair, which I currently sit on, I have worked with a lot of architects, the majority of whom do not support this bill. While we have heard from some, I think the previous caller had some great points about why we may be hearing that. I feel sincerely that this bill offers a solution where no problem exists. Currently, as has been discussed, architects do oversee a wide range of specialties and two areas that only licensed architects have been rigorously trained and tested through national licensing exams are the coordination of all these disciplines, as well as the analyzing of the overall impact of the building to health, safety, and welfare of the community. This doesn't mean that interior designers, much like acoustic experts, commercial kitchen designers, aquatic specialists, child care design specialists, and many others don't play an important, valuable role. All it means is that they are a part of the team that does not require government oversight and licensing to safely contribute to projects. At heart, I believe architects are allies to the interior designers and would always be preferring to work closely together professionally and in relationship to elected officials when needed. I appreciate again the time that has been allowed to me to share my opinions with the board, and would like to ask the board to reconsider moving this out of committee, much like the AELS board and input has been shared. This needs a lot of work to effectively meet any needs that actually exist for the state of Alaska, if there are any at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. And I don't see any questions of the committee. And so with that, our last testifier, I think, is Mary. Mary, are you there? And if you are, if you can state your first name, last name, and your affiliation.
Yes, my name is Mary Knopp, and I am a commercial interior designer. I am NCIDQ certified. I am an FASID, a fellow with ASID, and I'm also a partner in an architectural firm, ECI, here in Anchorage. I'm here today to support HB 61. Unfortunately, my three architectural partners who are also in support of this bill were not able to call in today. HB 61 provides economic benefit to consumers by eliminating the necessity of a layer of architectural design oversight and related costs to the small scope of work within commercial buildings of public occupancy. Registration and oversight is self-funded through the AELS board, and as you heard earlier, it's about a $30 increase for a two-year license. It broadens consumer choice of qualified design professionals who are educated, trained, and tested to provide public life safety design within commercial buildings. Architecture and interior design have evolved into related but distinct disciplines. We complement each other, but each discipline has its own unique areas of knowledge, expertise, and depth of service. Historically, in Alaska, related professions have evolved to include complementary regulation for similar but separate areas of expertise to better serve the public. Nurse practitioners and doctors, landscape architects and architects,
and even the Uber Lyft drivers and the taxi drivers. In all instances, the public has benefited from a broader offering of choice within the market. And thank you very much for your time.
Great, thank you. I don't see any questions from the committee. So I believe our last testifier is actually Ms. Dana Nunn, calling in from Anchorage. If you're there, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you. My name is Dana Nunn. I'm affiliated with the American Society of Interior Designers, Alaska chapter. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and committee members, I'm speaking in support of House Bill 61. As I mentioned, my name is Dana Nunn. I'm an NCIDQ certified commercial interior designer based in Anchorage, Alaska. Interior design has been misconstrued and mischaracterized as trying to be architecture or something other than the technical, complex, and human-centered practice of creating safe, sustainable, accessible, and efficient interior environments in compliance with law and regulation that support health, safety, and welfare for all persons who enter. Commercial interior designers qualified by specific education, required work experience, and rigorous examination are trained to design within the constraints of building, fire, life safety, accessibility, and sustainability regulations and guidelines. Workforce development stands out as a strong and timely benefit of HB 61. With capital and infrastructure projects on the horizon, already strained professional design workforces may struggle to meet the need for design services. You cannot build a major public project if it has not first been designed by qualified professionals. Professional registration ensures Alaska can compete as a destination for a rewarding career in commercial interior design and removes obstacles to small businesses that might otherwise not pencil due to current onerous and duplicative oversight requirements. Further, professional registration could provide incentive for military spouses to work for Alaskan firms rather than working remotely for outside firms, as we know several are doing right now, especially as Alaska allows greater license portability. Professional registration for interior designers provides greater opportunities for students completing interior design degrees outside to return rather than seeking opportunities elsewhere that already allow qualified designers to practice to the full potential of their education, experience, and examination. Please support the passage of House Bill 61. Thank you for your time today, and I am available for any questions.
Okay, thank you. And I don't see any questions of the committee. So thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody further in the room who'd like to testify? I don't see anybody. Is there anybody else online that would like to testify? I don't see anybody. So with that, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. And we do have one fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, and that is OMB component 2360. It's also control code RZRAQ. And I believe Ms. Chambers, oh, there you are, was going to, if you could go ahead and explain the fiscal notes, and if you can also just put yourself on the record again.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This is Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And we have filed a fiscal note that, as was mentioned earlier in testimony, would add one occupational licensing examiner at $88,000 a year to help offset the additional workload of this particular program. And it would also add $4,000 for the two new board members, taking into consideration some of their in-person meetings and expenses, in addition to some additional core services and regulations charges that go along with adopting regulations and adding staff. I do want to say, to be very clear on the record, that we do not anticipate this program in and of itself, whether there are 25 registrants or any, you know, 200 registrants, to be in need of 100% of a licensing examiner. But we currently have two staff members for 7,400 registrants right now, so we are beyond capacity. And AS0801065, which is the law that governs fee setting for professional licenses, requires that all professional licenses for this board be set at the same amount. So the additional cost in this fiscal note will not be borne by the interior designers alone. It will be spread across and shared among the entire board as part of the cost of doing business. So there's a benefit to the entire board for adding staff, and there is also a cost to the entire board for adding staff.
Great, thank you. Do we have any questions regarding the fiscal note? Representative Wolf?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. How many are, I know there's a document around here. Do you know the number off the top of your head of the total number under this board's oversight?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Wool, this board currently has 7,400 licensees.
Thank you. Any further questions? I see no further questions. Thank you very much, Ms. Chambers. So with that, if there is no further discussion regarding the bill itself, we'll go ahead and set aside the bill. And this concludes our agenda for the day. Our next meeting is tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., and at that meeting we'll take up public testimony on HB 170, that is the Energy Independence Program and Fund, ADA. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we will stand adjourned at 3:51 p.m. Thank you.